At a special session of the United Nations Security Council on Wednesday, the U.S. called on China to cut off all oil exports to North Korea in response to Pyongyang's recent missile test.
Through sanctions, we have cut off 90% of North Korean trade and 30% of its oil. But the crude oil remains. The major supplier of that oil is China.
North Korea test-fired its most advanced ballistic missile yet on Wednesday. Pyongyang said the new missile reached an altitude of about 2,700 miles and traveled more than 5,900 miles during its 53-minute flight.
You know, if we want to take a macro view of it, we can see the difficulty that ESPN has had dealing with the Internet. Some of the things the ESPN has done in the Internet and done with new technology has been very strong, and their websites are part of that. But fundamentally, a shift away from watching linear television on cable or anywhere else has been a problem for ESPN. ESPN seems to have had trouble adapting to a post-sports center world and finding the right editorial model to keep viewers with them.
If Bitcoin were to be regulated, could it be viable?
One of the main functions of government is to create currency. Bitcoin is successful only because of its potential for circumvention, lack of oversight. So it seems to me it ought to be outlawed. It doesn't serve any socially useful function. We ought to just go back to what we always have had. And this is just a bubble.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's November 30th, 2017, 5:09 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. We've got a really good show for you this morning. In just a minute, we'll bring in our thought leader. Breck Hansen is here this morning from Associated Bank. A little bit later on, we'll talk about how generous America is and was on Giving Tuesday. Robin Sachs Frankel will be here from Bankrate.com. They've actually done a really cool research study on the way people give, and you'll be surprised as it's broken down into generations, millennials, Gen Xers, baby boomers. That's coming up in our second segment this morning. First, let's head to the markets on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Asian stock markets declined after U.S. tech stocks fell, and China reported manufacturing, stronger manufacturing as investors looked ahead to that key OPEC meeting that we mentioned there in the montage. Right now on the markets in Asia, the Nikkei is up about 127 points. That's good for about 0.5%, but everything else is lower in Asia. The Hang Seng is off almost 1.5%, down 446 points, and the Sensex is off about 453 points as well. In Asia this morning, Europe markets are generally positive. Everything seems to be in the green there this morning, with the DAX leading the way up almost a full percent, 107 points. The FTSE is up about 0.25%, and the CAC in France is up about 0.5% as well. Futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 89 points this morning. S&P futures higher as well. A rough day for tech stocks yesterday in the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ this morning futures pointing toward opening gains up about 17 points. Quite a sell-off day yesterday for some of the FANG stocks. One estimate suggested that there may have been $60 billion of value lost in a day yesterday. Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google all losing some value yesterday. At one point, the NASDAQ was off more than 120 points. This morning, some stories that we're watching for you. We mentioned the OPEC meeting. OPEC ministers preferred they want to extend crude outputs cuts until the end of next year, strengthening expectations that the oil cartel will decide to continue pumping less oil for more dollars. Snapchat is separating what friends share and what media organizations publish in an attempt to appeal to a broader range of users. The photo messaging app has not been getting enough users, especially beyond its core of younger people. Parent company Snap's stock down sharply since its initial public offering earlier this year. And do you have travel plans for the Christmas holiday? American Airlines is scrambling to find pilots to operate thousands of flights over the busy Christmas holiday period after a glitch in the system used to schedule crews Spokesperson for the airline says American expects to avoid canceling flights by paying overtime and using reserve pilots. American isn't saying how many flights were affected, but the pilots' union says about 15,000 flights were scheduled without a captain, co-pilot, or both. We'll keep you posted on that as it gets closer to the Christmas holiday season. It is Thought Leader Thursday. Breck Hansen is here this morning. He's the vice chairman and former head of commercial real estate at Associated Bank. We're going to be talking about banking trends, not only from this past year, but for next year as well. Breck, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Thank you, Steve.
It's hard to believe that we're here at the end of the year already. 2018, right around the corner, just a few weeks away. Thought we'd talk about some of the predictions, some of the things that are happening in the banking industry. One, you know, front and foremost is what we've been talking about a lot here in our thought leader conversations, and that is this digitization of banking. It's coming into its own, but it's not there yet. Do you think it'll happen in 2018 completely?
I think it won't happen completely, but it will continue to move that way. I mean, we've had conversations before about banking trends in general, and that's that. You know, when I joined Associated Bank 7 years ago, I think we had 350 branches. Today we have 220. And that's not because the bank is smaller in terms of assets. That's because bricks and mortar aren't the way it's going. Obviously, digitalization technology is the way it's going. And most of our customers, frankly, or at least half of our customers, probably never go into a banking branch. That's not unique to the Associated Bank.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just consumers with banking. It's all through the banking sector, isn't it, where you rarely see your customers?
Oh, it's you know, years ago at a former bank, we started to put loan production offices outside the city of Chicago throughout the Midwest, cities like Cleveland, Columbus, Detroit, et cetera. And part of the banking play was to get deposits of people. And they would say, this was 15 years ago, well, do you have a bank anywhere near us? And we would say, no. And they would say, well, then how can I bank with you? Well, now we've got, you know, the Associated Bank has 11 branches or 11 out-of-state offices, and that's not an issue. I mean, if they want to bank with us, they want to keep deposits with us, they're very accustomed to banking digitally. So, no, not an issue.
Forrester, which is a market research, I'm sure you're familiar with it, they've sort of outlined a lot of this predictions and things that are happening. And one of the positives they talk about with the digital economy is that something that you just talked about, and that's enabling people to have banking in places where they may not have access to good banks. Rural areas, outlying areas, not every community has a physical bank.
You know, I'm a former military officer, Steve, and I've been with USAA, a company that has catered to military officers and now actually caters to their families as well as some of the enlisted people. And they're headquartered in San Antonio, Texas, and they have a bank and they have a credit card system. And I've got four children, all of which, along with their spouses, in some way utilize USAA for credit cards, for banking, for insurance. And I know for a fact none of them have ever been to San Antonio, and there aren't any branches. So that's the generation, and they're comfortable with that.
Forrester says that eventually, if not already, financial institutions won't see half of their customers, like you just mentioned. There will be no face-to-face.
Well, how much face-to-face do you do, Steve?
I can't tell you the last time I was in a bank. It's been that long inside a bank to do anything besides go to an ATM.
And we used to, exactly, yeah. And we used to worry about teller lines and things like that. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, there are still some cash businesses in the city that like the ability to go to branches. So, you know, we're not going to eliminate that, and we're also not going to eliminate the ability to talk to someone because occasionally in this computer environment, you can't get your answer. And so it's a slippery slope of a combo of people as well as good systems and service.
What will happen to all of the branches that we see in all of these communities? Will they be all automated, or will there be some people left in them?
You know, we've done some of the automation, you know, virtual tellers for you know, very similar to when you drive into a car wash and you're talking to some woman on a screen, and not to say. And I have to think that in some markets we've actually swung too far, and that people want to have interaction with a human being, or at least have it available. We will do more of the virtual teller. I think, you know, look at our bank. We've got banks in markets like Chicago, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, where technology, people are pretty accustomed to it. But you go to Hayward, Wisconsin, or you go to some of the little towns in Wisconsin, we've decided that we've got to keep those banks more full service.
Always have that human, in case of emergency, break glass and a human will come out, I'm guessing. That sort of scenario where they're actually full staff.
I hope it doesn't come to that, but that's sometimes the frustration we have.
Yeah. And in all of this discussion, we often hear this, and we've mentioned it here, the disruptors of all kinds of different industries. And in banking, there's a move to not fight them, but to embrace the disruptors like Amazon. And overseas, I think it's Alibaba, this cloud computing idea. Don't fight them, join them.
I can't agree with that more. I think that the amount of capital it takes to catch up to some of the technology that these disruptors, is the term you used, have come up with, is insurmountable for a bank to even think about. And so to start to look with joining and outsourcing and everything is exactly what the solution is going to have to be.
Some of the fintechs, these startups, the cultures are different too, I would imagine. What are the challenges of melding those two together?
Well, I probably am not the expert on melding those two together, but I think the way to do it is that a lot of your technical people in the bank, your IT people, will probably be recruited from firms like the fintech firms, and so that you'll actually import some of that culture, and over time, we'll move folks back and forth.
Is it expensive for banks to catch up to the times? I know this Forrester report also talked about banks having legacy, you know, software still, legacy operations behind the doors.
It's extremely expensive, and that's exactly why banks are as far behind as they are. And then you have a situation where you go through acquisitions or mergers, and you try to put two organizations together. In fact, we're doing it right now. I don't know if you're aware, but we're a $30 billion bank. We bought a small bank in Milwaukee, a $3 billion bank by the name of Bank Mutual. Systems are completely different, and it's going to be expensive. It will pay off, we hope, over the years, but just to put us both on the same platform.
How fast does something like that have to happen?
Well,
yesterday.
When we merge, I mean, you know, day one, we want to be operational. I've been through mergers when it's really frustrating, when we hang a sign, call it Associated Bank or call it Bank of America, on a former other bank's branch, and somebody walks in and tries to cash a check, and it certainly isn't good for you if you say, well, I'm sorry, but we're not technologically capable of doing that. You've got to go to an old branch. I mean, and we've seen that happen.
Bank of America says it's going to spend $3 billion annually for new software development. So that's the kind of money we're talking about. Those are the big banks, obviously.
Well, and they made the comment annually because we all know that you do this, and in 1, 2, 3, 5 years, what you've done is obsolete.
Right.
And so that makes it very difficult to pull the trigger. That's why partnering with somebody that's keeping up seems to make a lot of sense.
Just think to your own personal life. I mean, you get a Windows 95 becomes Windows 2000 becomes Windows X. I mean, it just happens quickly almost every other year. So the same happens for big banks and little banks, just like happens at your home.
You know, interestingly, if you look at the bricks and mortar of the facilities in a bank, historically, the expense has been with new branches. As we look at our budgeting at Associated coming up in the next few years, it's going to be with improvements to our existing and adding technological centers. It's not customer facing, but it's, you know, the back office space and the kind of technology that goes with that.
As we enter a world where all of our stuff is done online and through our digital devices, it's we've also talked about this often, too. The security of this is nonstop to keep up on all of the different ways to make sure people's money is safe.
Well, not only the security, but the regulation that goes with that security. I mean, we've talked before just about money laundering and the kind of expense banks have actually experienced because of security. And nothing can hurt your brand more than a breach, and we've seen that in the corporate world big time.
Everybody's predicting regulations are going to continue to be taken down, the ones that are onerous. Is that going to help or hurt?
Yes.
Yeah, good answer.
I think that a lot of the regulation that has been put in has been limiting to the banks. On the other hand, you haven't seen the financial institutions get silly like or cavalier like I think we did, you know, prior to 2007, 2008.
This is our last thought leader conversation with you. We're kind of sad about that. You're retiring. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you have any thoughts, parting thoughts for us?
You know, often, and yeah, I'm a fossil, or I just did the math. I started in the banking industry in 1977, so it's been 40 years. And I would say that the technology we're talking about is kind of frightening. And it isn't, you know, the banking world that I grew up in and probably experienced any success that I had in. So that being said, it might be time, because catching up, I marvel at the young folks and what they know and what they can do.
You have managed to prosper, though. How have you done that? And as all of this is changing, is it just a sense of I want to embrace these changes and not fight them? Or,
you know, I don't know if it's prosper, and this sounds old school, but even when you can do things online, I think there's still a need for that personal touch and personal relationship. And if I've had any luck or fortune in this business, it's been the fact that I embrace getting to know, getting to help, and getting to see how people function. Mm-hmm. And I think that's still going to be important.
Some of the old school ways of doing business are still tried and true, aren't they?
Well, in some instances. I mean, we have these discussions at home all the time when the family might be texting or tweeting, and I'll say something absurd like, well, why don't you pick up the phone and call them? People do things a lot differently today.
So what will you be doing in your retirement?
You know, I get that question a lot, and my kids will tell you that I've been practicing retirement for the last 20 years.
So you're ready.
And so it won't be a huge change. I think it'll be, I've got 5 grandsons now. I've got, I'm on a couple boards. I'm on some philanthropic boards. And most of my friends that retire say, you don't have all the extra time that you think you're going to have. Nothing major, though. I'm not moving to Paris 6 months a year or something like that.
Well, we're going to miss you, and we wish you all the best, and you're welcome to come by here anytime.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right. Brett Kanzer, the vice chairman and former head of commercial real estate at Associated Bank. Remember, you can hear more of our conversation with Brett this morning. We're going to do it after the bell and post it in our podcast of the program later this morning on WGNradio.com. You can also find all of the thought leaders at AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. And make sure you follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. 540 now here on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. Money, stuff, or time. A new survey ranks our favorite ways to give to charity. Some stats on the season of giving and some trends perhaps as well in this segment. Robin Sachs Frankel joins us from Bankrate.com, where we find this research out this morning. Robin, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's begin first by, I mean, we all just took part in Giving Tuesday. Are there any, is there any data in yet on how much people gave, or are they still sort of figuring up the dollars on that?
You know, I don't have any hard data yet on what happened on Giving Tuesday, but I do know some trends for 2017 in general. What we did find was that most folks who gave say they gave more in 2017 than in 2016.
And that's pretty good, because I think in 2016, some numbers I have, $168 million in charitable contributions, which was almost a 50% increase over the year before that. So pretty good giving from people. What has your research found about how people are giving and what people are giving?
Sure. So we found that, in general, most folks preferred to donate money. About 40% of those in our survey said that their preferred method of giving was to donate money. And it could be either cash, check, you know, credit card donation online, that sort of thing. We also found that 35% preferred to contribute clothes, food, or other goods, and 19% actually preferred to give of their time.
Is there something demographically about the giving that your research found in terms of who's giving what and what age groups?
Sure. Millennials' preferences are actually markedly different from that of baby boomers. Millennials had the strongest preferences for donating clothes, food, and other goods, and volunteering their time was their second favorite way. Baby boomers, by contrast, actually preferred to give money more than any other way of donating, and only 14% of baby boomers actually like to volunteer their time.
Any reasons why these segments exist like this?
Sure. I mean, in general, baby boomers, because they are older or have been more established in their careers, they typically have a little bit more disposable income. You know, millennials, but on the other hand, maybe haven't been in the workforce as long, and they tend to be settling down and saving up for big milestone purchases like a home or starting a family.
Time probably is an issue there. Do you think millennials may have more time on their hands than older folks?
Well, if you don't have kids, then you definitely have a little more time in your hands. I can speak from experience with that with my two kids. But also, millennials in general tend to prefer experiences over just writing a check. So they like to be a little bit more hands-on and involved and feel like they had a more active role in general, not just with charitable donations. So that might play into it as well.
Well, give us a sense of what that might be. I mean, at the holiday time that we're in now, there seems to be all kinds of ways of getting involved. Are you talking about volunteering somewhere, being hands-on at some facility?
Sure. You know, our survey didn't break it down by the exact ways that millennials preferred to volunteer their time, but certainly that's one way. I mean, you could – it runs the gamut ways that you can volunteer your time, everything from helping out at a soup kitchen to helping to rebuild in an area that might have been affected by the natural disasters. There's a lot of ways to give of your time. If you have a specific skill set like coding, and maybe there's a nonprofit that needs some help in that area.
It's comforting to know that when people do make more money, that they're inclined to give some of that away. And that seems to always have been the tenets that your parents teach us, right, to have taught us. Give of yourself, and if you have it, give it.
For sure. And definitely those, particularly households with an annual income of $75,000 or more, were particularly generous so far this year. 37% upped their donations over the year prior.
What do disasters have to do with any of this? We had quite a few of those this year. Do you think that helps increase people giving?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the most popular reasons people gave, aside from their income rising, was a desire to help support the victims of all these recent natural disasters like hurricanes or the earthquake in Mexico and things like that. I think that when you're inundated with images and stories about these unfortunate events, it has a greater impact on how you feel and what you're drawn to, how you're drawn to help. So absolutely.
Is the giving done generally all year, throughout the year? Or I know we have Giving Tuesday. I'm sure charities would like us to give throughout the year as opposed to just that one day, wouldn't they?
Sure. I think in general, the time frame between about Thanksgiving to the end of the year tends to be when people give the most, but that's because people are being asked the most. There's a lot more campaigning and a lot more queries being put out by the different nonprofits for people to donate at this time of year.
And that's a good point to bring up because it is the end of the year. A lot of us are thinking about getting our records in order for tax season. How big of an impact is charitable giving on taxes play into all of this discussion?
You know, not many folks said that that was the main motivator for them to make a donation. I think altruism is probably the biggest reason because they want to do something nice, not necessarily take the tax break.
Well, that's good to hear, too. So the work in Congress that could possibly change that charitable giving aspect of that, how much you can deduct, that may not actually impact people's giving preferences at all.
That's true. It may not. I mean, you'd have to give an awful lot for it to have a significant impact on your taxes come tax time. I mean, that would be a wonderful thing if you gave enough that it would really affect how you paid your taxes. But I don't think that's the reason why most people do it. I think it's just like the cherry on top of the whipped cream. It's just a nice little something, that tax break.
And it feels good as well. Any other highlights from the survey that you want to share with us?
Sure. I mean, men were about 13% more likely than women to say that they preferred to donate money, and women were about 11% more apt to donate clothes, food, and other goods. We thought that was kind of an interesting statistic.
Well, we're going to link out to the survey and the information here, but Robin, we appreciate you getting up with us and being on the opening bell this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Robin Sachs-Frankel is an analyst at Bankrate.com. Again, we'll link out to their findings here about giving, all the ways people give and what they're giving and how they're giving.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures pointing toward opening gains later. 91 points the Dow futures are up right now. NASDAQ futures are up 21, and S&P futures are up 8. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we watch the livestock futures trade at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday, lean hog futures fell, retreating from a three-week high. Technical selling coming in and a USDA report showing a jump in average hog weights in Iowa and southern Minnesota. So at the end of the day, the nearby hog contract traded down 77 cents, $65.07 a hundredweight. Meanwhile, the cattle market showed a little life yesterday. The December live cattle ending 82 cents higher, trading at $120.47 a hundredweight. January feeder cattle up $1.30 a hundredweight. Turning to the grain market, corn futures up about 1% on fresh export demand, and a report that China has purchased about 10 to 12 cargoes of mainly U.S. corn in the past month. And the department confirmed yesterday that private exporters sold 101,000 tons of U.S. corn to unknown destinations. State Farm Bureau convention time. The Wisconsin Farm Bureau begins its annual meeting at Wisconsin Dells tomorrow. And then this weekend, the Illinois Farm Bureau comes into Chicago for its annual meeting. Meanwhile, here in Phoenix, Arizona, the Ag Retailers Association is holding its annual convention, and Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue will be the featured speaker. That takes place at about 11:40 a.m. today. And then I'll be joining the Secretary and other agricultural leaders for lunch. Looking forward to a great day. You have one. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. It is 5:53 now here on the opening bell. A couple of other business stories we're watching for you this morning. The number of international visitors arriving in the U.S. declined nearly 4% in the first 6 months of this year compared to the same period in 2016. That's according to data released yesterday from the U.S. Department of Commerce. Many sectors of the travel industry have been warning that President Trump's anti-foreigner rhetoric and immigration policies would lead to a tourism decline, and this seems to back that up. Nearly every region of the world sent fewer tourists to the U.S., Western Europe, Eastern Europe, Asia, Middle East, Africa, South America, Central America, and the Caribbean. Only Canada sent more visitors to the U.S. in the first 6 months of 2017 compared with 2016. Powered by football and The Voice, NBC won a second consecutive weekly ratings contest. According to Nielsen figures released yesterday, the victory helped NBC further narrow the gap with frontrunner CBS for TV total viewers for the TV season so far. The Greater Peoria Farm Show bills itself as the largest indoor ag showcase in Illinois, and this year is no exception. The 36th edition boasts about 355 vendors and more than 1,000 products, 90,000 square feet of exhibit space. The show runs through today. The exhibits include the traditional down-on-the-farm equipment as well as cutting-edge in tools and technology. The show manager says the show has the latest and gets better and better every time. Again, the Greater Peoria Farm Show underway through today. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, November 30th. The Labor Department reports today on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. The Commerce Department issues its October report on consumer spending, which counts for roughly 70% of U.S. economic activity. Freddie Mac reports on this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. The official lighting of the national Christmas tree is later in the day in Washington, and it was 35 years ago today that Michael Jackson released Thriller, his sixth studio album. It quickly became and still remains the world's best-selling album of all time. The Market Desk Outlook for this November 30th, Thursday.